Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
Oh, good morning. We are back for another live show of Leading Edge Medicine. Dr. Mixon here and Dr. Samira Umat. And Dr. Umat, you were gone last week. You had something exciting and we're hoping you'll kind of share where you were.
Yes, sure, I will. It's good to be back, though. Every time I go away, you have this excitement about where you're going and what you're doing. But my goodness, when I come back home, I'm so ready to be back home.
Woo!
Driving
yes.
my own car, come to work. It's just yes. something good. But yes, no, I was away at Oxford. My daughter graduated from her master's program. So we went to support her for her graduation ceremony.
Wonderful. So you were in England.
We were.
Flew
yes.
there.
Yeah.
Enjoyed.
And came
flew
back.
Flew back.
Right.
And how's that jet lag treating you? Are you pretty good with that?
Coming back, you want to go to bed early and you want to wake up early. It kind of is a nice feeling. Every time I'm able to wake up early, I feel good about it, but it's not my innate nature. So I'm going to enjoy this for as long as I can.
There you go.
It's quiet in the morning. You can get a lot accomplished. You're rested. Your brain is alert and active. So it's a good feeling. Yeah.
That is a good feeling. Now, I don't want to rain on your parade, but you know, we do have daylight saving time tonight.
Is it tonight?
It is okay. tonight. Well, okay. tomorrow morning at 2 a.m. or, you know, before you go to bed tonight, you'll be waking up an hour
earlier.
Yes. Earlier. Yes. So that may adjust you quickly.
And the sad yeah. part is that means it'll be dark again when I go back
yes.
out on the trail at
yeah.
6 a.m.
Oh. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I love driving in with the light today.
I know. I drove in. It was light. It was beautiful. Christmas in the morning. And you kind of enjoy that. And then
yes.
when it becomes dark again, it's like, where did it go?
And weren't they talking, I guess every year they kind of talk about making no change.
Yeah.
And
well,
yeah.
two states don't change, Hawaii and Arizona.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
right.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'd love to not change because it does mess up with your thinking
your sleep cycle, your circadian rhythm.
Your circadian, yeah. That like
it takes
woo.
Weeks to really straighten it back out.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, politicians, they are what they are. You can't really expect them to be real human beings.
So. That's the first time I've heard him say that.
Oh, boy. Yeah. And with some of the memes I saw this week, wow.
Yeah.
Some of the filters that were put on the State of the Union. Oh, my.
Okay.
Yeah. Some interesting things going on. But we talk medicine on this show.
We do most of the time.
Yes, we do. Leading Edge Medicine. Let me give you that phone number if you'd like to be early bird and on the air with your questions for Dr. Mixon and Dr. Umat. Here is that number, 800-465-8770. Okay, Dr. Mixon.
My daughter's not a morning person. She hates waking up in the morning. She always wants to stay up late and doesn't want to get up in the morning.
But then that's most kids these days,
yeah,
isn't it?
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, so, you know, I try to encourage her. You know, the early bird catches the worm, and her answer was, and why would I
like worms,
well, no,
Dad.
We were taught early to bed and early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise.
That's right.
Well, and that makes a good husband, but she still wants to know why she should do it.
Yeah.
session. Well, like I said, every child I know is like that.
There you go. Yes. She must be almost a teenager, Dr. Mixon.
11 going on 40.
Boy. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, well, it's not going to get better anytime soon. So
I know. She turns 12 next month.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and she's bugging us desperately for a cell phone.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy. Okay.
She does not yet have a cell phone. Some of the classmates have it.
All right.
And she does not, and she feels quite put upon.
Okay. Okay.
But, no. So I have told her it's not a matter of age. It is a matter of when your father believes you are sufficiently mature not to abuse the privilege.
Okay. All right.
There you go.
And what does that mean? Is she going to get it or not?
Well, yeah, I'm talking to her mother about it. Her mom says no. She's actually been doing pretty good of late.
Uh-huh.
But what I was explaining to her mom is, you know, this is both carrot and stick.
Right.
If she misbehaves and abuses it, the cell phone goes away.
Mm-hmm.
And if she's doing well and, you know, getting her homework and everything done expeditiously and at high quality, she keeps the cell phone. And that way it is the carrot.
Uh-huh.
Well, you get it. It is also the stick.
Uh-huh.
You know, if grades start to suffer, too much time online, it goes away.
Yeah.
There you go.
You
know,
yeah.
So. I did that with a driving license for the kids.
You How know, do you and, take away the driver's
oh,
license?
Oh, well, when they
take
get...
Take away the car.
Yeah, well, when they get the driver's license.
I see.
So
right.
One was a year or two afterward.
Okay.
One was a year afterward because they were not ready. Not ready at all. And the third was right on her 16th birthday and...
Yeah.
Yeah, one and three were quite responsible. Just number one had older friends that drove him around, and he didn't push for it, and we didn't push for it either. It's like, well, wait. Yeah, but all three were different. It's like, oh, no. And number two wasn't quite ready, and
yeah, see,
had to wait.
My first seven.
Yes.
Six of them wanted their driver's license right on their 16th birthday. I had one son who did not get it till he was 19, and he had no desire.
Yeah, that was my. His friends were older.
I've got all these siblings who can drive me places.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I have the bus. I have, feet. I can walk. My leg's not broke.
Ride my bike.
And he said, but see, I made a rule with the kids. I bought them a cheap beater car. I think I paid an average of $250 for each of their cars. And I told them, this car is old and fragile. Treat it like a fragile old lady, because if you abuse it, it'll die on you. And I'll provide the car for each child, but they have to pay their own insurance.
Insurance, yep. Yeah, we did.
And so that was his thing. Is he said, you know, if I get a license, then I have to get a job. Because that the only way to pay my insurance is to work.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, I'm going to stretch out this adolescence as long as I reasonably can. And he did.
There you go.
Yeah.
And then he'll be an adult the rest of his life.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah. This adulting thing, you know, is a bit daunting sometimes.
Oh, my gosh, it sure is. Yeah.
Anyway.
Pay my bills? What?
What?
Aren't you supposed to do that?
The government? Yeah.
No.
What's up with that? Right. Oh, 800-465-8770 to call in with your questions for the doctors today. How about medical news? Anything new this week?
Oh, nothing dramatic. I mean, we've got the variety of viruses, the push to, you know, saying that the flu is still hanging around, so people, you know, are still susceptible, especially if they're elderly and frail. But no, nothing dramatic going on. I guess the biggest medical development in my life is I had a little surgery on my right forearm, having a little cancer taken off on Thursday. So, you know, so I'm kind of gimpy with my right hand right now just because.
You showed us what they were going to take off last week.
Yeah.
When I was now, you know, during the break, I'm going to ask you to roll that sleeve up because I
was
actually
there's not much to see because there's a great big pressure.
Oh, he's doing it now.
Pressure dressing.
Oh, okay.
So
yes,
all you
do.
See is this big black Covan on my arm. That is.
Okay. You look like you've been playing tennis with the big thing on.
But that's just because it was a fair sized incision, and so they didn't want to take a chance on it. So I had to wear that till midday today.
Okay.
I'll take it off and put a more convenient dressing on.
All right. So. And you doctor yourself, right?
Yep.
Now, did they get everything they wanted to?
I think so. I mean, you never really know until you get the pathology report.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that was an old, the good news is it was in the scar from an old gunshot wound.
Yes. So the scar will just kind of blend in with
well,
the
I'll have a scar in the scar.
In the scar. Okay.
Yeah, because the gunshot wound scar is about 4 inches long. And it turns out that then I took that old injured abnormal skin to tropical sun when I was, playing games with Air America. And there's, hence the little squamous cell cancer, way too much sunshine on already traumatized scar tissue.
Okay.
Yeah, and herein is the plug for sunblock.
Yes, let's go ahead and give it because we're getting into spring here in another week and a half.
You got it. Yep. Yeah, and now these days I use sunblock, of course, but, those days I was in my early 20s.
Yeah,
macho
nobody used
man.
It then,
nobody.
Right?
No.
I don't think guys use it even now, but I think it's a smart thing to do.
Yep. Well, now I have my sunblock and my hat.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, I mean, that's what they say, right? Cover up the areas that you're going to expose to the sun, whether it is with a hat or a long-sleeved shirt or long pants. They don't have to be, thick. They can be light, but as long as they're covering the area
and
that is exposed.
At least
to the
filter
sun.
That sunshine.
Exactly. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
No matter how old you are, use that sunblock
if
you're outside.
You got it.
Cover it up.
If you don't want skin cancer and wrinkles, you want to cover it up.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
So.
All right. 800-465-8770, waiting for that first phone call today.
I also heard something about CBD was published recently, Jerry.
Mm.
Again, people ask, right? And I don't know much about CBD. I never prescribe it. But there is enough literature to say people like it because it reduces pain sensations. And for people who have intractable pain, I guess, a cancer pain, and in hospice, I can see the applications. And obviously, in intractable seizure disorder where it's been shown to be very helpful. But this study published recently, I haven't read it all, just saw the headlines, was that it does cause some cognitive impairment and maybe some cardiovascular issues. So for people who just use it recreationally, I'd say just be careful.
No, I'd say don't.
Yeah. Well,
you really want to whack your brain.
Yeah.
The reality is we know now. Back when the cannabis craze was, everybody thought the cannabis was totally innocuous, alcohol was dangerous, cannabis was safe, but we now know cannabis is not safe.
And smoking was no problem.
But, it increases psychotic behaviors and, it triples the risk of you having a psychotic break.
Mm.
And the younger you are and the more cannabis you use, the crazier you have a chance of being.
Yeah.
We have enough crazies in this country, and we are trying to breed a whole new generation of, psychologically impaired individuals with cannabis use. So, and the laws are basically fantasies that we decide represent some version of truth, and so we say you have to follow these rules, but those rules are made by politicians, not by physicians. And when it comes to things like cannabis, what we know is the younger you are, the less stable your brain is to start with, which describes youth, the higher risk you will develop serious psychological issues with it. And the human brain is not really stable with decent impulse control till early 30s.
Mm-hmm.
So this rule of, being 21 is foolish because 21-year-olds, 25-year-olds are still susceptible to psychotic behavior and, lifelong mental impairment from cannabis use.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to make a rule of when you can start using it based on any kind of science, you'd make it 35, not 21. And of course, as the more of something you have available in society, the more the 15 and 16 year olds you're using it. And those are the kids that are really. So, when you look at the enormous number of people living on the streets and so on, they are not living on the streets because they enjoy sleeping on concrete in the middle of winter at night. They're because they've damaged their brain with drugs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what we've really done is bred a society of psychotics, you know, incompetent crazies who now have no choice except to live on the streets because they can't be gainfully employed. They are not sufficiently mentally able to function in a complex society, and nobody in their right mind is going to hire them because they're crazy. Mm. That's just what it is. And so, you know, as long as we permit and our politicians even encourage drug uses, drugs that alter the sensorium and damage the brain, we're going to have more and more and more trouble and fewer people competent to support this mass of mentally defectives that we have designed drugs to produce, which is really sad.
Very sad. And then what do you think about supplying the clean needles for them so they can shoot up?
Well, once more, you're encouraging the use. You're encouraging them to damage their brains so that they will be forever dysfunctional.
Yeah. Okay. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. You have a question for the doctors, we're here, and the phone lines are wide open for you. If you couldn't get through last week, now's the time to call. Don't wait until the end of the show. And it's okay if you've got morning voice. Sometimes I do, too. Call with your cup of coffee and your questions. Dr. Mixon here and Dr. Umat. Here is that number to call. It's 800-465-8770. We'll be right back. We love this music. Whoa! We all jumped when it did the what at the beginning, though. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. Good morning. I'm Lynette here with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. We love talking with you and answering your questions. Here's that number, 800-465-8770. Mary from Seattle on the line, bright and early. Mary, welcome to the show.
Hello, Mary. How can we help?
Hi, good morning. I look forward to you Saturday morning all the time.
We look forward to you.
In the past, a couple weeks ago, Dr. Mixon was saying we're talking about a colonoscopy. Mm-hmm. And so my question about that is, now I'm 86. Mm-hmm. They are not thinking that I should have a colonoscopy. I have had them over a period of years, I think maybe four in the past, every 5 years or something. Mm-hmm. And in the past, they've found polyps, but they were not, they were not worrisome. They took them out. But now it's been 5 years, and so here I am. And I don't want to have another one because it's quite hard on me being up all night and doing all those things. But mm-hmm. I was wondering, Dr. Mixon said that he was just going to do that stool testing.
Yeah, the Cologuard.
Now, and
Yeah, the Cologuard
test. So I was wondering, when they look at that, do they just look for blood or do they look for cells? And so is that something I can rely on doing that also?
Okay.
I mean,
because
what if I live to be 100? Maybe if I have a polyp that started a few years ago, and it's going to be 10 years old, and I don't know. So that was one of my questions.
Well, let's talk about it a little bit. They don't want to do a colonoscopy after you're in your 80s, and that's primarily because statistically you'll die of something else before the colon cancer gets you, and they don't want to spend the money.
I know.
You know, once we get our age, we become disposable. At least that's what they think. Now, personally, I disagree with them. I don't think I'm disposable, and I don't believe you are either.
No.
So let's...
Thank you.
let's push back on this a little bit. Now, Cologuard has advantages and disadvantages. Cologuard, all you do is you have to provide a little piece of stool. You swab the stool, and you provide them with the swabs and a little bit of your stool. And they are not just looking for blood. What they're actually doing is looking for genetic markers that are consistent with a malignancy, with a cancer. And those genetic markers can be it's a very sensitive test. And so it'll pick up about 95-96% of colon cancers without having to have a colonoscopy. So for screening purposes, that's pretty good. And, you know, the good news is you don't need any prep. You just poop in the toilet.
Right. However, you say they pick them up. So at that point, have you got then cancer in a polyp?
That's the goal. It's sensitive enough that most of the time, if you've got a cancer at the tip of the polyp, and that's usually what happens, you develop a polyp. The cancer usually starts at the very tip of the polyp, and then over time it grows down the polyp, and at some point it comes all the way down to the base and invades the colon wall, the wall of the bowel. And that's when you start to get a problem. If you can get the polyps out when it's still limited to the polyp, it's a very simple, small procedure, and you know you don't end up with any real risk. And that's why we like to get these diagnosed as early as possible before it actually invades the wall of the bowel.
So how long do you think a person? How often would a person take a Cologuard test then?
Well, I try to get it every year or so, every year or two, because it's a cheap, easy test. It's about $200.
So is every year good enough?
Yeah, but here's the problem. Here's the downside, okay? The Cologuard test is so sensitive that as we age, we start getting some abnormal tissues in all of our body, including our bowel. And so the false positive, once you're in your mid-70s and up, you get false positives sometimes. And so the test might say, hey, we see cells that are worrisome for cancer, and you don't really have a cancer, okay? But here's the good news, and this is the reason I do it, even though I am also in that age group. If my test is negative, I have nothing worrisome for cancer. So I relax. I'm good. If it comes back positive, then I have to get a colonoscopy. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. So a positive Cologuard sets me up to say, okay, now I have a reason I need a colonoscopy. Mm. And if I'm negative, I can say, oh, okay, I'm negative. Everything's okay.
Right? Okay, I follow you. So that's good. Have you got time for one other question?
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay, so now I take rosuvastatin, and I hear you about, you know, your program and how you try to supplement a person with all the various...
We put your endocrine system back to where it was years ago. That's the goal.
Yeah, and so how do you approach your heart doctor about this? Are they... of course, there's all kinds of heart doctors, but what do you do? Try to work on the endocrine system, and then when you see results, then you kind of reduce the statins, or how do you go about that? And then, because I don't know what the heart doctor is going to say when you talk to him about this kind of a thing.
All right. Well,
go ahead.
You know, what we generally do is if you're already on a statin, and hopefully you're not having any side effects from it, you know, because some do, some
who
don't.
Knows?
Yeah, if you're not having any side effects, if you're feeling fine, that part, that's good so far. If we then do other things for you and your cholesterol start coming even lower, the first thing we do is reduce the dose of the statin. You don't need as much. And if we can then keep those cholesterols going lower and lower and lower, at some point, your cardiologist is perfectly happy to stop the statin because you don't need it anymore.
Yeah. Okay.
So you don't have
that's
to convince him to
I
do anything.
I kind of wondered.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. It's Thank you. I appreciate it. I've been thinking of these questions, and I'm glad I got through to you. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You're welcome, my dear. You take care.
Yeah, that was a great question, actually.
Right.
You know,
a lot of people struggle with that.
Yeah,
thank you for your call.
Jerry, let's talk about this for a little minute, because it is an important topic, and a lot of people struggle with this and don't know which way to go. Mm-hmm. Cholesterol is not all bad.
No, cholesterol is critical for life.
Exactly. Every cell of our body has cholesterol. The question is, when does it become dangerous and life-threatening that we need to treat it? And lately, the parameters for normal cholesterol levels are changing. Mm-hmm. We used to say LDL of 100 or below is okay. Now they're becoming a little stricter and wanting that LDL at 70 or below.
Yes.
So the question is, what else is going on in your body? So at our clinic, what we do is look at your personal risk profile, your family history. We look at genetic markers, at least one of them, and we do DNA testing. But then we also do imaging, like a calcium score, to see whether you have really disrupted the blood flow in the coronary vessels or not with plaque buildup.
Right.
And then we do fractionation studies. And that's something people can ask their cardiologists or their primary care providers to do, a fractionation study, which tells them whether the LDL particles are small or big and how many of them. Because if they are smaller, then they're not the same as larger, fluffy molecules, which are not as dangerous. And so with that, in our studies, we also look for inflammation markers, oxidized LDLs, and so on and so forth, which then give us a better idea of how aggressive we need to be in lowering that LDL cholesterol.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, the LDL cholesterol is kind of fragile. And it is damaged by sugar, it's damaged by high insulin levels, it's damaged by free radicals, it's damaged by a whole lot of stuff.
Saturated fats.
Right. And so the theory is, if you have less LDL, you have less substrate there to be damaged. Mm-hmm. And that is one way to approach it. The other way, of course, is to say, okay, you've got what you've got. Now, let's not damage it. Mm-hmm. And decrease all those factors that damage the LDL.
Right.
Okay. And, of course, the ideal is to do them both, so that you have less LDL to be damaged and you have less factors operating in your body that would damage it in the first place.
Right.
And that combination works very, very well.
Yeah. Yeah. So a lot behind that LDL level and that total cholesterol level, and there's a lot you can do to lower that if you are in a dangerous place. But then statin alone is not the only answer. It makes us comfortable because we lower the value, but it doesn't mean that it's reduced the risk for mortality.
Well, and actually, what the one study done in diabetics shows is that testosterone lowers the risk of heart attacks twice as much as statins. You know, and so men and women that move their androgen load back into a more youthful level lower their risk of heart attacks and strokes more than the statins lower it. Mm-hmm. So why aren't we using that instead of the statins? It works twice as well. You know? And then if you put it together with a PDE5 inhibitor, you lower your risk even more. You now double your testosterone protection, which is already double your statin protection. So now you're four times safer than a statin. And the PDE5 inhibitor lowers your risk of prostate cancer and breast cancer. And if you do have a cancer, it slows its growth, so you're not as likely to die from it. And it improves blood flow in your brain. So why isn't everybody doing that?
Right.
But, you know, again, they will someday, 20 years from now, when they catch up with us.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, like people will ask, what can I do to slow down the aging? And there is so much that we can do already, but sometimes other providers aren't going to tell you this. Nobody's going to, you go to a primary care doctor, he's not going to say, oh, here's your PDE5 inhibitor to improve blood flow. They're only going to give it to guys when they talk about ED.
Sure.
And
but women have brains, women are at risk of cancer, women need better blood flow to their muscles.
Yeah. And you know, sometimes guys will not talk about their ED, and so they don't get the drug that improves blood flow, and that helps with every other aspect of your life. And so a lot of times you have to kind of go seeking out these things, but they are available if you're interested in
My wife is on testosterone, and she is on PDE5 inhibitors because she's got a brain, she's got breasts, she's at risk of these things, and I want to keep her safe for as long as I possibly can.
So everybody listening, notice he mentioned his wife is on testosterone. So women listening out there, it is very important for you to have this conversation because it helps. Testosterone is a healing and repair hormone.
And it lowers your risk of breast cancer by about 80%.
Wow, that's 80%
reduction in risk of breast cancer. Yes.
Huge. You hear the music? We're going to take a quick break, and we're back with Ray and Glenn in just a moment. And your calls, too. Here's the number to get through, 800-465-8770. Stay right there. It's Leading Edge Medicine. Dr. Jerry Mixon here in the studio. Dr. Samira Umat and your questions. And we've got the phones lighting up with a lot of questions here. We were talking about testosterone. And I think that's what Ray wants to talk about, too. Ray calling in from California. Good morning, Ray.
Hello, Ray.
Good morning. The guy asked me where I was originally from. I told him I was on the road.
I live in Woodinville. Oh, not too far.
Okay.
Hey, how long can I keep putting testosterone on in the same place?
Well, I've been using it in the same places for 26 years.
Oh, okay. Okay, because I had heard that somewhere that it starts building up in the fat cells and it doesn't go in. Yeah. Very well after a while.
Well, but don't put it where you got
a
lot of fat.
Is that just a misnomer?
Not really, but...
Well, no, I don't. I kind of... My doctor, the clinic, they like for men to put it up there where the sun don't shine. And I try that every now and then, but it's kind of uncomfortable.
Okay, well, that would have been that would probably be Dr. Wright down at Tahoma. He and I have a little disagreement about that.
Dr. Mixon knew right who that was.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, John.
They say because women put it on their mucous membranes, it's more absorbable there.
Well, and it is more absorbable mucous membranes, but I apply mine to my genitals and my penis. To the testicles and penis. The scrotum, there is no fat. Right? It's a thin skin layer. And it's got a very rich blood supply. It's very thin, fragile skin. And it absorbs testosterone gangbusters. So, if you put it on your testicles and your penis and just, and then what's left over on my hands, I rub up on my shoulders and biceps. And into the axilla, into the armpits. And that's because you get a higher blood level directly where you apply it. So, I like high levels in my genitalia because that gives me great blood levels. And that's a area that really likes testosterone. But then the muscles in your shoulders and biceps, you get a little extra in there. And then when you work out, you've got more of the hormone to make muscle. And so I like having strong shoulders and arms, and I like having functional genitals. And so those are the two places I put it.
Okay. Hey, do I have time for another question?
Go ahead. Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Hey, I've got a teenage granddaughter who's a vegetarian, and I just don't think she gets enough protein with her vegetarian diet. Do you guys know of any good book that would... help her to understand nutrition.
Yeah. Although
the nutritional needs of a vegetarian.
Vegetarians can get plenty of protein if they use a lot of beans and legumes. So if they're doing sprouts, if they're doing the beans, all of the legumes are protein rich. So that's not generally a program, unless they are. Very restrictive. I mean, if they're sticking themselves to just greens and without any legumes,
no.
they're
Yes. She eats a lot of white flour stuff. You know, she's a typical kid.
Yeah, and see, when you're doing the white flour stuff now, you're...
She needs to eat more vegetables and fruits and stuff. And
yes.
You know, it's kind of like, you know, beating a nail on the head.
Oh, yes. No. Mm-hmm. I've got an 11-year-old at home.
Yeah. And if I may say so, I would encourage you, Dr. Mixon, to... Well, you're talking about cell phones. Our teenage daughter was restricted from... granddaughter was restricted from, you know, the social media things. Instagram, yes. TikTok.
Oh, no. Well, she's
you
not
know, those are terrible things. They do such a disservice.
Yeah.
Because some of her friends ended up, you know, and they went to a private Christian school, ended up, you know, thinking that they were the opposite sex. And I thought, you know, where did that come from? Probably social media.
Well, not just social media. They have to be taught it in school in Washington. It's really kind of bizarre, but there is a state law that requires every school to be certified in order to be allowed to function by the state of Washington has to lie to their children. Hmm. You have to tell the kids that boys can become girls and that there's umpteen dozen different genders. And so, you know, that's our stupid politicians requiring the schools to lie to the kids.
We've been lying to kids for a long time, and I'm sorry about evolution. You know, I believe God created us, but it's just another thing that we're shoving down our throats.
But our problem here is that the kids are not able. At least my daughter cannot avoid online because the school is all online. There are no paper textbooks, and so. All of her study, she's on the computer all day long because all of her work is done on the computer. All of her tests are taken on the computer. All of her essays she writes are done on computers. And then she comes home at night, and if she wants to do her homework, she has to be on the computer because they don't accept paper. And that's the modern world. So my youngster is on computer all day, but she's not allowed on social media. Okay, she does not go on TikTok or Instagram or any of the others. And the only YouTube usage I allow her is if she's stuck on a problem, say she's stuck on a math problem and she wants to know how to do a certain type of equation, there are wonderful instructional videos on YouTube. And you just go up to YouTube and you type in the type of math problem you're interested in. And there's some very good instructors there that will teach you how to do it. So the computer can be very, very useful, you know, but it can also be a pain. She came home the other day and she did not understand how the four amino acids formed codons to make proteins in the DNA. Now, you know, when I was in sixth grade, we were not learning about DNA. But in her school, they do. They're way ahead. You know, so I just pulled up a little video on YouTube for her, you know, and it explained, yes, you got the, you know, the cytosine, the arginine, the guanidine, the thiamine, and these form three amino acid groups, and these are called the codons, and they form 62 total proteins, you know, but of that, only 61 are used. The other three are for stop. They code a stop order to stop making the protein, you know, but that only 42 of them are used in humans. The rest are unstable and break down. And so you've got 42 proteins in the average human being. And she understood it.
Wow.
You know, so you can use the computer to teach kids a good bit of biology and biochemistry.
Yeah.
Which is what I use it for her. So anyway.
Good questions, Ray. Thank you for that.
Thank you very much.
All right. Take care, sir.
You know, bye-bye. With the... With, okay.
Yep.
Thank you so much, Ray. If you've got a question like Ray and Mary this morning, here's the number to call, 800-465-8770. Let's go to Gig Harbor. We have Sally on the line. Good morning, Sally.
Hey. Hi, I have two questions. One of them on that Cologuard a couple calls ago. If it's only 95% effective, could it then give you a false read and say, yeah, we don't detect anything, and then, remember, like you said, then we know for sure we don't have to get one? Could it fake?
False negative, yeah.
It's a false negative, sure. But on the other hand, the colonoscopy is not perfect either, because that bowel is not a nice smooth tube, and when you put the scope up, you don't just see every aspect of it. There are folds and creases and crypts, and it's a very irregular sort of surface. And your doctor goes all the way up, and then as he's backing out, he's looking around trying to see everything. Mm. But it is very possible to miss, and they will miss a certain number of cancers. They just will. Nothing done to or by human beings is perfect. All right. So,
and I'm 70, so I'm hoping that I'm, well, yeah, it's just I don't want to be disposable, so I don't want to get one. I would love to be able to take that Cologuard, and if it does do something, I go in for sure. And if it doesn't, I just don't.
Yeah, well, and that's my personal approach. Now, you know, there will be some people probably who disagree with me, and that's okay.
Well, and then, you know, you can do them more frequently, right?
So, yes.
Because they're slow growing, they will catch it maybe the next time if they miss a small growth.
Often, that's a great idea. How often then would you?
I do mine each year.
Oh, just once a year? How about you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, instead of a colonoscopy every 5 years, I check my Cologuard every year.
Well, do you think maybe if I was worried, I could do it, you know, twice a year?
Well, I guess you could. You know, your insurance isn't going to pay for it that much, so you'll be a couple of hundred bucks out of pocket. But you can.
Okay.
Yeah, you know,
I mean,
you can have anything.
On Amazon or something.
Yeah. You can have anything you want in this world if you pay for it.
You know,
that's the problem. People are not getting in the end what they should have gotten, and they paid for it. But at any rate, on your Hawaii vacation, I just want to know, was there any place you wouldn't go? Is there any place you would kind of recommend to us, hey, you know what, you might want not to go there to that certain
okay.
place?
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, yes, I will tell you about that, but Lynette, ogre that she is over there giving me a break signal saying,
did Dr. Nixon call me an ogre? I sure hope his microphone doesn't disappear just like that.
Should I just hang up then?
I
got the gender wrong. She would be an ogreette.
There we go. Thank you, Dr. Nixon. Ogreette. Okay. Sally, you stay right there because this will be a fun thing to talk about next. We'll take the break and we'll be right back. This is Leading Edge Medicine with Ogreette Lynette, Dr. Mixon, and Dr. Umat. 800-465-8770. We'll be right back.
I'm picking up vibrations. She's giving me the excitations. I'm picking up vibrations. She's giving me
and we're back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. Good morning. We're glad you're here. We're live in the studio. My name is Lynette Morgan, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Umat. And we're going to talk a little bit about Hawaii. Sally, Sally had a question for you, and I love it. Okay, so Sally, what was your question about what not to do in Hawaii?
And who's this ogreette? Is that a person? Was it a mean
Lynette.
Lady or something at the hotel?
Lynette. This is Lynette. She had to give me a break signal, so I couldn't keep talking.
And he got a little upset.
Lynette keeps us in check.
That's right.
She tells us when to speak and when we can.
So I wanted to know. Yeah,
it's Lynette the ogreette.
Let's find a different name.
Is there an adventure or a place that you went to that you will not go again? Is there maybe a restaurant? I mean, but then you can't say the name probably.
Well, sure, I can.
Sure.
Something that you would advise us not to.
As long as it's not overtly profane, I can say it because I buy this time. This is mine.
This is.
Okay? They don't pay me to be here. I actually buy this time. So I do any darn thing I want with it.
A motel that was a horror place. I mean, you know, just something that we shouldn't do.
Okay. Well, you know, my family's a little bit different in that my wife has a real aversion to sunshine. She is Chinese from Chengdu, and the Chengdu girls are very proud of their pristine skin. And so they avoid sunshine like the plague. I mean, when you go to Chengdu, you will see ladies on their bicycles. And the bicycles for the girls have a big umbrella stand, and they have a great big umbrella. They're riding their bicycle with an umbrella over their head to keep the sun off them.
Really. And they wear gloves, so they don't
do wear gloves. I have pictures of my wife going up the pyramid
really
in Chichen Itza. It is hot in Chengdu in the summertime. But they love hot, especially food. They worship the chili pepper. First time I went to Chengdu, I discovered that that stuff burns just as bad coming out as it did going in.
Boy. Wowie. Okay. So back to Hawaii, Dr. Mixon.
She hates sunshine when we go to Hawaii, which is really kind of bizarre. So we don't go to Maui, even though that's where we got married, because I didn't know about her aversion in our early months together.
She's just not one to lay in the sun all day.
Oh, not
no,
at
no.
All.
She wants to be up and doing.
We're always out hiking and moving and going places. So, you know, our thing is a little different. We spend a lot of time in the water. That's why we did the underwater motor scooters the last trip. You know, we swim with the sharks. Although she chickened out on the cageless. You know, before last time we went, or time before last, we went and we got in a shark cage and lowered us down, and then they chummed the water, and the sharks were running round and round our cage and bumping into it, hoping one of us would stick a hand out.
Oh boy.
You know, but that was fairly safe because we were in a shark cage. But then we were going to do a free swim with the sharks this time. But she chickened out at the last minute. So
there you go. I like what you did, because you showed us pictures of the underwater scooters. That looked really fun.
Yeah, they're like kind of electric motorcycles for underwater. And you actually sit on these little things with a helmet over your head so you can see around. And you drive around under the ocean in your scooter.
I had never seen that before.
That was wild.
That was nice. It's a little on the pricey side, but it was a lot of fun. I think we'll do that again someday. She won't let me cliff dive.
I don't blame her. Come on.
So
we need Dr. Mixon here.
I'm an adrenaline junkie. I have always liked to do things. You know, in recent years, a while now, unfortunately, my company's bought a high policy. They think I'm important, so they bought a key man insurance on me. and the insurance company said, if we're going to insure a man of that age, of that many millions of dollars, here are our rules. And I'm not allowed to drive a motorcycle. I'm not allowed to skydive. I'm not allowed to fly my own plane anymore.
No jumping out of helicopters.
No jumping out of helicopters. I mean, they took all the major adrenaline out of my life, except my wife. She still gets my heart pumping and racing, and so I get a lot of adrenaline with her. But
that's safer, too.
There you go.
It is. It reminds me of a study many years ago when they were trying to decide if sex was safe for men who'd had heart attacks. It turns out that sex with your wife is perfectly safe, but sex with a mistress or a girlfriend actually has a higher incidence of second cardiac events.
Oh.
But what about women?
I'm glad it
attacks?
Is like that.
Yes.
Yeah. What about women who have heart attacks?
Well, women have different kind of heart attacks than men. This is part of where this gender foolishness is falling apart. Women have different types of brains. They have different lungs. They have different hearts. And women don't have the big left main stem occlusion like the men do. They tend to have a lot of very small occlusions, terminal branches that clot off. And so women don't usually get that big chest pain with the shortness of breath and clutch their chest and fall over. They get a series of small heart attacks that go unrecognized because they don't have the classic pain with it.
Wow.
And so for a woman, the first sign of a heart attack is usually they die. They just topple over
and
die.
Oh, my gosh.
So for women, we need to do everything we can to prevent cardiovascular disease, because we don't get the kind of warnings, the kind of angina warnings that we get with men.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So
good information, everybody.
Yeah.
You know, so women, you know, start with young women. We have to start intervening earlier and more aggressively, because we're not going to get the warning signs as often.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
Okay.
So
here we go.
Right. Well, okay, one last time. I mean, was there any place that stuck out that you wouldn't go back to?
No, you know, the thing she likes and the thing I like, I don't know. On the Big Island, we both like going way up the plateau. There's horse riding, horse ranches and stuff up there that are just wonderful. She likes the east coast of the Big Island, but it rains so much. I don't like it over there. She likes it because there's not so much sunshine. when we're on Kauai, she loves the North Shore because the afternoon often has the clouds and the sprinkles come up, and she really enjoys 80-degree rain. You know, it's great to go walking and hiking when it's raining and 80 degrees. I prefer to go down to the, you know, the South Shore where, I'm trying to remember the name of the place. Anyway, where there's the Spouting Horn and so on is.
Oh, yeah.
And it's
Last suggestion, and I'll let you go. If you go for 2 weeks, do a thing where 1 week you get to do the stuff you like to do together, and the next week you do what you, so that you'll get your whole full week of what you want to do in.
It sounds good to me, but you know what? Anything that makes her happy makes me happy. And so if I can make her smile, my life lights up. And if I see her laugh, it's, you know, I'm just so much in love with a woman after 20 years. I don't mind doing anything that makes her happy.
Aww.
I really don't.
I wish you could clone yourself 1,000,000,000 times over.
Yeah, you and every listener, female listener out there, is thinking the same thing. Yeah,
my daughter criticizes her, though. She says, "Dad, you're just her puppet. You do everything she wants to do."
Say, you just wait, young lady. You're going to wish you had someone like me.
That's right. Somebody would love to do it.
All right. Take care, my dear.
Okay,
bye-bye.
How fun. Lots of fun stuff there, Sally. Okay, we are headed over to Tenino. We have Glenn on the line. And what are we going to talk about, Glenn? What's your question?
I'd like to throw in, I assume there's a fair amount of guys that would like to clone his wife.
Oh, yes. Yes, I'm sure.
Yes. You know, we've never let her age. I put her on the longevity program when she was 28 years old when I first married her. And she still looks like she's in her early 30s. And, you know, she is lean, hard, fit. She has no wrinkles. She's just gorgeous. And she's, you know, 48 years old now.
She's after 30, a permanent breeder, huh?
Yep, that's right. Yep. So she's a keeper.
There you go. Last week, hour two, you talked about black currants and how
yes.
much better they were for you than blueberries.
Oh, and yes, much better.
How and why are they better for so much better for you than blueberries? And you mentioned something called Satch 1-6.
Okay. Sirtuins, the Sirtuin system.
How do you spell that?
S-I-R-T-U-I-N, Sirtuin. As usually just goes by CERT, C-S-I-R-T. CERT 1, CERT 2, CERT 3, CERT 4, CERT 5, etc. You've heard of rapamycin, the drug that, you know, all the anti-aging folks are using to slow aging and lower the risk of cancer, etc. Rapamycin is a CERT 1 inhibitor, okay? It decreases sirtuin 1. You do want to inhibit sirt 1. You don't want to inhibit sirt 2 because sirt 2 is important for your immune system. But sirt 6 is a different sirtuin system that actually enhances long life and lowers risk of cancer, heart disease, dementia, etc. So We got a break. You hear the music. We'll talk about it a little more when we get back, okay?
Stay right there, Glenn. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll talk more about black currants and why they're better than blueberries. This is Leading Edge Medicine, and if you have a question, phone lines are open for you. Here is the number to get through, 800-465-8770. We'll be right back. Stay right there.